Welcome to the Excel Pod. Welcome to the Untied Podcast, where we unravel the knots of life with faith, wisdom, and encouragement, because together we're here to untie from tradition and embrace truth through powerful Bible teaching. My name is Garrett Bernethy. I'm one of the hosts of this show, along with two of my very good friends, Corey and Tyler, and we are back from a one-week hiatus where we were not able to be on here due to a few things I'm sure we'll talk about. But this is season 2, episode 12, and we are coming to you with another big picture episode. It's actually the last big picture of the season, which is pretty crazy that this has gone, that we have gone this far in the season already. Seems like it's flown by. But today we're going to be looking at the big picture of a book that probably a lot of people don't generally read through, and that is Obadiah. So I'm looking forward to that conversation that we'll have, and of course, all the rest of the conversation we will have. So before we get into all of that, guys, what's been cooking?
Well, not a whole lot.
I haven't been cooking. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Corey.
I haven't been cooking anything because we're on the road, but I've been eating some of the best food I've ever eaten in my entire life. Because we're down here in the New Orleans area, and I have been immersed in their culture of Cajun, Creole, French. It has definitely been a 5-pound meeting for sure. Maybe more than that. I don't know.
Is it kosher for a Tennessean to say that Louisiana food is good, if not some of the best food he's had?
Oh yeah, we appreciate all good food wherever it may be found.
Wherever it may be found.
It is surprising though. It is surprising, Tyler, because you've been introduced to this when you were here, maybe in Oklahoma. I don't know if we've talked about this, about if it's in Oklahoma or not, but I mentioned barbecue bologna the other night, and it was like, what? I had no idea what barbecue bologna was. But anyway, it's been, as you would imagine, great catfish, which we have that back up in Tennessee. I told them it's the same fish, just further up the river. But crab cakes, and we went over to one of our elders' down here house of the night, and he had cooked smoked pork chops and ribs and all kinds of stuff, and then his wife made some jambalaya, and I've had etouffee, I've had red beans and rice. I found out that I've been saying andouille wrong. I thought with two L's it was andouille. That's the way I've been saying it my whole life. And the minister down here, which is a great man of God named Emmett Collins, he and his lovely wife Dee took Melody and I out to eat supper the other night. And I said, I'll have the red beans and rice with andouille. And he just started dying laughing. And he said, do what? I said, andouille. He said, how did you say it? I said, andouille. And he said, no, it's andouille. And I said, oh. So anyway,
the things that you learn,
it don't matter what you say it, as long as it tastes as good as it does, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. And for those who are listening, and even those who are viewing, if Corey hops in and out, he's been good so far. It's because the hotel Wi-Fi is some of the best in the country. So,
it's actually done better since we went live. So yeah. Maybe that's a good sign.
Maybe we're helping it.
Yep. But it's been great. We've been, for those that don't know, we've been down here. I did a a marriage seminar on Saturday, and then we've been doing a gospel meeting on the home and family. Tonight's our last night of that, and it has really been one of my favorite weeks that I've ever had in my life. It's such, the Franklin Street Church of Christ is the congregation down here in Gretna, Louisiana, is technically where they're at, kind of a suburb on the West Bank of Mississippi from New Orleans, but they have been so encouraging and so loving, and I don't know where I've ever gone that I've immediately felt at home and with family as quickly as I have here, and it's a credit to them, but it's also a cool thing that we have that in the church, that wherever we go, we have family when we treat each other that way. So anyway, yeah. It's been a really good week. We've had three baptisms this week, it's just been a very encouraging week. So anyway,
that's great.
Enough about me. I know you cooked breakfast other than that, Tyler. I saw that.
Yeah. Saw that bacon. Yeah,
tons of bacon.
And
which, yeah, I love bacon. I don't like cooking it because it smokes up the whole house. And I like it on stovetop. I don't like doing it in the oven. I feel like that's a cheater's way of doing it. Some people, I feel like a cardinal sin, they'll throw it in the microwave, and I absolutely not. So the Blackstone, again, great for that. I put down 3 pounds of it all at once and fried it up. It was great. But yeah, we've been having the college kids over pretty consistently, about every other Monday night, and we'll go through a study. This is finals week for them, and it's kind of dead week for me. So I was like, we're not going to study tonight. We're just going to eat, hang out, and then you go home. So it seemed to work out.
Well, I was currently, I'm looking for that picture because I laughed at your comment, at the comment that you made. yeah. I'm so thankful we live under the new covenant. And I imagine the group does too. And there's a picture of so much bacon on this on this grill. Like, it's a beautiful picture.
Oh man. We've been studying Old Testament a little bit, just in my side studies, and specifically Leviticus, going through some of these laws work. And there it is. All that bacon. The whole neighborhood could smell that one. That was great.
Yeah. Just
all the dog talent.
Yeah.
Just excellent.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah. Between the shellfish and catfish I've been eating and the bacon you've been eating, we'd be in tough shape if we were still under the old law this week.
Yeah. Well, I did three slabs of baby back pork ribs last night too. So we're all three would not be in good situation. Oh man.
That's great.
Yeah. So, well, last week we had the Excel Still More Bible workshop, and all through from last Monday, everything was just hitting. So that was one reason why we did not have our normal show, was because I just could not make it work with everything that was going on. But we do thank you to all of our listeners and viewers for being patient with us, being patient with me, I should probably say. We had a great weekend down there. And this week we've had Joe Wells here doing a meeting with us, looking at the idea of connected, protecting your family in the digital age. I would say this, that it has been an excellent, excellent seminar. Joe has his book out entitled Connected, and I'm not just plugging this because he's my friend because Kyo Publications is our partners, but if you are looking for some good material to help you parent in the digital age, or just want to know more about the dangers and the protections and things, you know, that you can even harbor for yourself, I would highly encourage anybody to look at that book, Connected, or even have Joe out to your congregation. Just really, really excellent material that he's been going through. So I'll link it in the show notes. I know we're not doing books today, but it has been very helpful for us here, and I know it probably would be for a lot of people too. So A lot going on. So, well, guys, let's dig into our big picture. I know that we've got a little bit of a time crunch this morning and probably won't reach our normal time, but we're going to do our best to get this discussion in. We seems like this time of year for everybody is just super busy, and I'm just so glad that we can work this time in to talk about the big picture of the book of Obadiah. So if you're following along with us, we do encourage you to jump over to Obadiah, Old Testament book. Not a lot of people probably just think this is one probably like Habakkuk or something, right? It's not one that everybody just jumps to and says, "Hey, I want to read that." But if you are looking for a short read, man, it's one chapter. That's you can knock it out in no time. So you're reading through the Bible in a year. These are the books that you look forward to. So, let's open it up. I'm going to go ahead and pull up Obadiah here, and we can begin checking this out. So, where do you guys want to start with our big picture of this book?
I think it's important to understand a little bit of the context as to what's going on. Otherwise, a lot of this will be, I don't know, kind of lost in its words. But Obadiah was sent to go basically preach against Edom. What was going on is in about 590 to 586 BC, Babylon had completely destroyed Jerusalem. And as Babylon came in and they're already victors over Assyria, they become the world power at that time. All of these Israelites who are in Jerusalem, they're either getting killed or they're fleeing or they're getting captured. Kind of those three options. And as they're fleeing, these Edomites who actually lived up kind of in the hill country of Israel, of Jerusalem area, what they would do is they would see these Israelites start to flee, and the Edomites would kind of grab them and hang on to them and then hand them over to the Babylonians. And it was this way that they were able to kind of take sides with the enemy. What's interesting is orchestrating all of this, of course, is God. When you read Daniel 2, 21 and 22, it says that God's the one who raises kings up and lowers kings down. Mm-hmm. Well, it was in God's plan to use the Babylonians, and that was some of the prophecy to Habakkuk too, that, "Behold, I'm doing something in your day that you would not believe even if I told you." And that was to take Babylon and destroy Jerusalem. And so I could see how someone might say, well, Edom was actually helping God's plan because he wanted to destroy Jerusalem, and Edom is handing over the Israelites over to Babylon. Basically, in big picture term, it's like if your parents are getting on to one of your siblings, and then all of a sudden you pipe in and you start blaming your sibling for A, B, and C that weren't included in the initial punishment, your parents are going to look at you and say, like, "What are you doing here? This is between me and them." I think the biggest problem, though, is Edom is from Esau, kind of the lineage there, and they were basically blood relatives to the Israelites. And so God is saying, I can't believe that you are turning over your own brothers to the enemy. And so then we have Obadiah basically unfold in this incredible preaching/prophecy of, you guys have done wrong. You think that you're doing God's will. You think that you're walking with God, but you've done wrong because you've basically played the role of God and are also trying to judge the people of Israel. And judgment is coming for you next.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that goes back to like Genesis 27 and 28 is where the original story of Jacob and Esau unfolds, with Jacob conniving with his mother and stealing Esau's birthright. Not stealing, but hoodooing him out of it, maybe is a better way to put it. And then you see in 32 and 33 of Genesis, when Jacob returns and how he and Esau kind of work things out, and you're thinking, okay, this ought to be good. Well, then to Tyler's point, chapter 36 of Genesis is where it tells the genealogy of Esau and says Esau is Edom and how he's the father of the Edomites. But all of this even has a further back history than that of, like, in Numbers chapter 20, if I can get over there, in Numbers chapter 20, when they were coming back into the promised land, it was kind of the same thing. So they had a history of this that had gone for a long time. But in Numbers chapter 20, and look down at about verse 14, Moses sent messengers from Kadesh to the king of Edom. Thus says your brother Israel. You all know the hardship that we've made. He talks about how they've been in Egypt and now they're coming back and God has led us. So verse 17, please let us pass through your land. We will not pass through field or vineyard or drink water from a well. We'll go along the king's highway. We'll not turn aside to the right hand or the left until we pass through your territory. So in other words, we're not here to pillage anything. We're not going to take anything that doesn't belong to us. We just need a pathway to go through. And Edom said to him, you shall not pass through, lest I come out with a sword against you. And the people said to him, we'll go up by the highway, if we drink your water, I and my livestock will pay for it. Only let us pass through. But he said, you shall not pass through. And he came out against them with a large army and a strong force. And so, you know, there's this history of the way that Edom has treated them. And even back right before Obadiah is the book of Amos. And in chapter 1, he's pronouncing these woes against all of the nations around Jerusalem before he gets to his own people. But if you look down at verse 11, thus says the Lord, for three transgressions of Edom and for four, I will not revoke the punishment because he pursued his brother with the sword and cast off all pity and his anger tore perpetually. So he kept his watch forever. So I will send a fire upon Teman and it shall devour the strongholds of Bozrah. So again, even though they were related, they have a long history of violence between them. And it's the Edomites that are perpetuating this against them. It was a wonderful analogy Tyler gave. You know, these are siblings in the big picture of things. And yet they're treating them the way that they are.
Yeah, I have it written in my Bible that this is the Hatfields and McCoys on steroids. I mean, that's really what this is. I mean, I don't know if you've ever, you know, I think most people probably know at least something about the Hatfields and McCoys, but that was a vicious feud. It really was. And, you know, I think there's a show out that Kevin Costner's in, and I'm sure if you watch that, you need to vidangel that bad boy. But anyway, that's really how it was. I mean, there was a great hatred. And even whenever Jacob and Esau came together, if I remember right, Jacob was a little bit nervous about how that was going to go. Mm-hmm. And whenever they embraced, you know, that really should have settled everything down. At least you would have thought it would have. But the feud just continued, and it actually continues all the way until the time of Saul and David. Whenever you look at 1 Samuel chapter 14, verse 17, into 2 Samuel 8 and verse 14, there's actually under David, in their conflict that they have, there's 18,000 Edomites that were killed, under David's hand. So Edom revolted under the reign of King Jehoram. And so that's kind of where we find ourselves. In fact, this really falls somewhere around, if I remember right, like 2 Chronicles chapter 24, somewhere around there, as far as like where the timeline goes. And there's a lot of crazy stuff that's happening where these people just absolutely hate each other. And so that's one reason why I feel like this really is the Hatfields and McCoys on steroids. But I'll let you guys go on a little bit more about it.
Well, and like most feuds, there's no real reason for it other than we don't like what they have and what we don't have, it seems like. You know, you mentioned the Hatfields and McCoys. You'll not believe that I'm bringing up this reference, but there's actually an Andy Griffith episode that's similar a feuding episode, the Carters and the Wakefields. And Andy goes and visits Mr. Wakefield, and he says, why are you feuding? And he says, because we're shooting at one another. And he says, but why are you shooting at one another? And he says, because he's a Wakefield. And he said, but why are you shooting at the Wakefields? And he said, because we're feuding. And he said, but why are you feuding? And he said, because we're shooting at one another. And he said, but why are you shooting each other? He said, because he's a Wakefield. And Andy goes, oh, I see. You know, and it's just this circular logic of, you know, we've got to get even with each other because we don't like them. Why? Because we're trying to get even with each other. Why? Because we don't like them. Why? Because they're.
Yeah. There we go. I think I paused for a minute. But yeah, I didn't catch the end of that, but I agree. Yeah. Go ahead, Tyler.
Oh, you're fine. So I think that's basic overview of Obadiah. And when you kind of simplify, that's what I love about these big picture episodes is it makes things really come to light and I don't know, become more relevant, I guess. I don't know when the last time I've ever heard a sermon on Obadiah was.
Mm-hmm.
But especially verse 10. So as we start to get into the text of Obadiah, and we could probably take it a little bit more chronologically than this rather than just jumping right in the middle of it. But verse 10, what God considered Edom to be doing was violence. And exactly what Corey had talked about with Jacob and Esau. Verse 10, because of the violence done to your brother Jacob, shame shall cover you, and you shall be cut forever. On the day that you stood aloof, on the day that the strangers carried off his wealth, and foreigners entered his gates, and cast lots for Jerusalem, I think this is probably the most shocking of it. You were like one of them.
Yeah.
That's the whole picture, is it's really hard when God's collective people start acting like the world. And mm-hmm. that was probably the biggest thing against Edom was, and especially I love the book of Habakkuk because of the dialogue and just how real it is. And maybe that could be one of our future podcasts too, is looking at Habakkuk. But the Babylonians were nasty people. I mean, in terms of theology, in terms of culture, in terms of religious practices. I mean, awful, awful people. And that's why when God told Habakkuk that he was going to raise up the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, Habakkuk couldn't believe it. Why them? I mean, of all the people to come in and destroy Jerusalem, why them? And yet, here's Edom, and God says, you've become just like one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of, like, what a smack in the face for the Edomites to just pause and realize, oh my goodness, like we were over here, no matter how you try to spin it, either they wanted to get on the side of the Babylonians so that they could be spared and they were trying to save themselves from this judgment. If they were trying to reason within themselves of, oh no, this is God's plan and the Babylonians are going to take Jerusalem, let's help them out. No matter how you spin it, God's kind of vindication for them is you've become like one of them.
Yeah. And they kind of, you know, gloated over the calamity, right, of Jerusalem. And mm-hmm. I have here, I actually did a survey I went and surveyed each book and kind of made some notes for myself a couple of years ago. And which, just throwing this out there, if you haven't done that for yourself, to create a tool for yourself is pretty cool. But anyway, I have written in here, nothing can save a guilty nation. And that's really mm-hmm. where Edom was. They were a guilty nation that was completely set in their ways. And there's a number of places that God's judgment on Edom is pronounced. You know, it's mentioned in the Old Testament. As they were the supreme, if you want to say it this way, a supreme object of God's wrath. So Psalm 83 talks about that. Isaiah 11:14, Isaiah 21, Isaiah 34, Jeremiah 49, Lamentations 4, Ezekiel 25. There's a whole host of other places, even Amos 1:11-12 and Amos 9:11-12 are all, you know, go back to talk about this. They were a supreme object of God's wrath for where they had come as a nation, and they could not escape that wrath because of, you know, who they had become. You said earlier that they had become like the nations around them, and I never can get past the phrase that we find in Judges, that they did what was right in their own eyes. And whenever you start doing that, you begin to really fall off the track and reap the wrath of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting too, I think, because especially if you stay within Obadiah, really what they did, there's the passage that verses that Tyler pointed to a few minutes ago, verse 10, the violence you've done to your brother. Well, what mm-hmm. violence have they done? Well, they stood aloof. It was just mm-hmm. uncaring. You know, one of the biggest enemies to brotherly love, which is the problem here, is not necessarily that they didn't attack Jerusalem. As Tyler pointed out earlier, talking about the history of all this, they just didn't help them. You know, that's what they did when they came in the land. They just didn't help them. They didn't do anything to them. They just didn't care enough about them. And then, verse 12, they gloated, they rejoiced, they boasted when things were going bad. And I think it all goes back to, and that's how, by the way, they were like them. They became like the enemies of them, not because they actually did the things the enemies were doing, but they just didn't care and didn't help. You know, and it's not enough. You know, Yach, you think about the story of the Good Samaritan. The priest and the Levite didn't do to the man what the robbers did, but just not caring about them, they were just as guilty as the robbers were. You know, it's not enough just to not do wrong towards our brother. It's also bad to just not do the good that we owe them. But it all, I think, points back to earlier in the book, in verse 3 and 4, he says, the pride of your heart has deceived you. See, arrogance was the big problem that Edom had. They thought they were better than them. And then notice the end of verse 4, from there, I will bring you down. You know, if we don't, we're going to be humbled. We can either humble ourselves or the Lord will humble us. And you don't want to be in that second category, of course. But, you know, arrogance and cruelty and uncaring, all of those kinds of things back then, and maybe this is kind of getting into some application, but back then were enemies of brotherly love. And today in the church, the biggest enemies of brotherly love we have are pride and not caring, you know, and just not showing the love for each other that we ought to. It's not, I don't know very many people that actively, aggressively try to do evil to one another within the church, but a lot of times we're just not as caring and loving as we should be. And I think a lot of that goes back to the pride that we have that I'm not as bad a situation as you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Just as I look through here, notice verse 15, for the day of the Lord draws near on all nations. You know, if you think about that word all, how many texts do we read, Old and New Testament, that word is so important? Whenever we mm-hmm. read through the book of Romans, right, all have sinned. And in many other places, the idea of God came to save all, right? And so all nations, he says, as you have done, it will be done to you. Well, there's discussion of judgment. How you judge others is going to be, you know, that's how you're going to be judged. Your dealings will return on your own head. So, you know, there's a lot of things that Obadiah is discussing here as the day of the Lord draws near that he wants them to think about. And I think it would be good for us to really think about those things. Not that this right here is pertaining exactly to us, but that idea of how we treat others, doesn't the golden rule apply to that? I mean, you know, so there's a lot to be said here, even though here's more the pronouncement of judgment, most likely. But just that concept here, you need to really think about your actions, how you're treating others. Like you said, brotherly love, that type of thing. These are things you need to think about, because the day of the Lord is drawing near. And maybe it goes back to to what we read in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10 and 11, what sort of people ought you to be? So I thought that was a pretty interesting saying right there. And of course, you know, he goes on to explain in verse 16 and following, because just as you drank on my holy mountain, all nations will drink continually, and they will drink and swallow and become as if they never existed. But on my Mount Zion, there will be those who escape, and it will be holy, and the house of Jacob will possess their possessions. And then, of course, goes on and discusses all of that for the house of Joseph and house of Esau.
Well, and I think one of the most relevant points of Obadiah is this whole idea, and you could probably preach a sermon about it, but on the same team. And we're all on the same team. And it's hard because we love, especially Western culture, we love our team and we love hating other teams. You think about our nations and the fights that have been going back and forth between America and Canada and China and all these other places. Well, hey, bottom line, let's take away all of those titles and all of those ethnicities. Bottom line, we're created by God, right? We're all equals in that realm. And maybe we are in a better position with God than other people or other nations or our neighbors. But that doesn't mean that we can just sit back and watch them be devastated and take pleasure in that and think to ourselves, oh, well, they should have listened, or bummer for them. Oh, well. But rather, there's this love that pours out. And I think that's where that arrogance comes out, is he calls them out. He says, Edom, you live in these lofty clefts of the rock, and yet you look down on these people and you almost act violently toward them because of the things that you aren't doing and some of the things that you are doing. And goodness, I mean, you come back and you could zoom in to this concept of on the same team as much as you want to. Corey, I know you're doing a whole thing on family and marriages this week, but marriages, you're on the same team. When you fight with your spouse, you're causing a civil war. And you're not only fighting with them, you're fighting with yourself too. Same team. When you fight in your church and there's division in the church, you're fighting amongst the same team. Even from a global standpoint, when we fight with our neighboring nations, same team, all created by God. And I think that's really brought out in the book of Galatians too. There's these Jewish people who think that they were the holy ones, the chosen ones, and then there were these Gentiles who were coming in, and the Jews thought they were better and more elite and had a pride to them. And that happens all throughout the New Testament, vice versa too. Well, you're on the same team, so start working like it.
Yeah.
The sin of neutrality, we don't talk a lot about, but there's a lot to be said in the Bible about, again, the old-timers' prayer is the sins of omission or commission. And the sins of omission is what we're really talking about here. Not necessarily doing anything. George Washington Carver once said, how far you go in life depends on your being tender with the young, compassionate with the aged, sympathetic with the striving, and tolerant of the weak and strong. Because someday in life, you will have been all of those. That's a man that was born into slavery, but went on to become one of America's best known inventors. And he had seen both sides of the social coin, you might say. But there's a lot of biblical truth in that as well, is that how far we go in our walk with Jesus depends on how that we treat others in their times of being down, because at some point we're going to need that as well.
Yeah. That, and think about this as well. And I think that we see this a lot of times in any kind of feud. We start seeing this in Genesis, 25. And it goes all the way, you know, we can trace it all the way to 2 Samuel, what, 18, I think. That is a long feud. That's a long time of hatred. And there are congregations, there are families, there are friendships that, you know, like you were saying with Andy Griffith, and it brought to my mind also, there's a Christmas movie called Klaus. And it's about this, I don't know if you guys have seen it, it's about this mailman who goes, it's a kind of an animated movie. It's about a mailman who goes off to this town, and the town is split right down the middle, two families that absolutely hate each other, and they have for hundreds of years, and they take pride in their hatred of each other. And maybe I've mentioned it, maybe I haven't, but anyway, oftentimes if you will talk to people who have been divided for a number of years, let's say a congregation that's been divided for 30, 40, 50 years, and you say, well, why did you divide in the first place? Most of them have no earthly idea. It's just, well, we just don't like them. And I'm not saying that that necessarily is exactly the case here, but oftentimes the longer a feud goes, it just becomes, well, we just don't like them. And there's really no reason why. It's just how life is. And so it keeps people divided from a pride standpoint, that we're this family and you're that family, or we're these people and y'all are these people, and we're just not going to get along. And so, you know, that's something that to at least consider for this, that from Genesis 25 to 2 Samuel, this feud has gone on and on and on and on and on, when it should have stopped whenever Joseph or Jacob and Esau came together. It should have stopped right there. They embraced, how many people remember that they were fine? No, they just kept on going. And unfortunately, that is a pattern that continues to exist for a lot of people, a lot of congregations, a lot of families. And at some point, you know, forgiveness has to come around. You've got to let go of things, and you've got to let go of your pride, because ultimately, you know, all these things that are talked about within the book, whether it's God's wrath, judgment, whatever, you know, they can come on you. And this really talks about two things. It talks about the judgment, but it's also discussing the restoration, right? The restoration of Judah. So, you know, there's a couple things to think about, you know, from a practical standpoint to apply to our life.
Yeah, and ultimately that God is going to be victorious overall. Yeah. We can divide however we want to. Northerners and Southerners, Easterns, Westerns, black, white, yellow, red, rich, poor, white collar, blue collar, whatever. But what we ought to be focused on is thinking souls and realizing that, you know, we're, as y'all said, we're on the same team. We need to be thinking about that, how we can glorify God and not ourselves. And that begins with, Jesus said, people know you're my disciples by the love that you have for one another. Not just that you don't do bad to each other, but that you actually show the love. So showing that compassion and showing that love, and not sitting back. One of the things we do too often is I'd help them if they asked me, but we wait for them to ask instead of just going and helping, showing the love, showing the forgiveness, showing the grace and mercy, and trying to work things out before they blow up in our face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. Well, guys, I think that unless there's another comment that we want to make, we can go ahead and move into our anchoring thought. Told our viewers this was probably going to be a little bit quicker of an episode due to some time constraints that we have. But I kind of want to go back to the thought that I just had. You know, there is always hope of restoration. There's always hope for salvation, as long as you have a breath in you. And we can't get caught up in such a hatred for brethren. You know, Tyler brought out the idea of siblings, and this is started out from kind of a sibling rivalry. And these are families that are against each other. And when in the beginning, it should not have been that way. Now, I realize that sometimes, you know, there can be tension, and there definitely was tension whenever it came to Jacob and Esau. But that tension kind of filtered down through the generations. And, you know, I don't think that we have anything to base any scripture on this, but, you know, typically, probably we could all say with our own experiences that if you and somebody else have tension with each other, oftentimes you end up talking about that tension with someone else. And the more that you act a certain way toward another person, the more you talk about another person from that regard, that tension often spreads to other people. And they begin to formulate their own ideas. And so now you have a great massive division that occurs based on where a certain person is, and you develop this pride about you. Well, God does not want us to have that. That there's nothing that God desires. You know, none of God's desires have to do with any division, whether it's among His children or especially with Him. And so I go back to, you know, Obadiah verse 15 and 16. Where he says, "For the day of the Lord draws near in all nations, as you have done, it will be done to you. Your dealings will return on your own head, because just as you drank on my holy mountain, all nations will drink continually. They will drink and swallow and become as if they had never existed." And so, you know, there's a great amount of importance in looking to God in all of these situations. Did Edom ever have a chance to repent? Yes, they did. God gives opportunity for that. God gave opportunity for restoration to happen for all of Israel. You know, the northern kingdoms did not take that opportunity. And through 70 years, you know, Judah and Benjamin, those tribes would ultimately receive that opportunity, and they would come back and be placed back in Jerusalem and go on from there. But the reality is that with all this, the main point here is that nothing ever good comes from this type of rivalry. Nothing good ever comes from this type from a visual standpoint of creating enemies. So we should not be creating enemies where there is none. So, for instance, in our little group right here on the Untied podcast, there is no enemy here. Corey and I may not agree on everything. Tyler and I may not agree on everything, but I guarantee you that if there was a disagreement, which there never has been that I'm aware of, but if there is a disagreement that we have, we will be able to work it out because we see each other as brothers. And that's how these people should have seen each other, as, you know, for the sake of our conversation, brothers. And so we can work those things out. Some may be a little, you know, have a little bit more work to do in working those out. And some things may be a little bit easier to work out, but we never view each other as enemies. And that's how the generations after Jacob and Esau viewed each other as enemies, when they should have viewed themselves as family. And so we can never allow ourselves to view each other as enemies from our standpoint in the church. We are all family. We're all brothers and sisters. We're all baptized into Christ. We're all placed in the same place. We're all in the room of grace, if you will. And you know, from a Romans chapter 3 standpoint, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And as you work your way through the rest of the, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, we're all now in Christ in the room of grace. That means we're all in the same place. We're on the same boat. We're on the same team. We're not enemies. And so we cannot go into a disagreement or you know, we can't ever view each other in that way, because that really brings out a great opportunity for Satan to come in and ruin something that's really good. And that's all because we have let him do that. So in everything that we do as Christians, view ourselves as family, and then work your way through the problem as family. The Hatfields-McCoys is a great story, but nothing I want to be a part of. It's always a story that's used in a negative way to express something that we shouldn't be, and we do not want to be that. So that's my anchoring thought today. Christians need to think of other Christians as family and not enemies, because we are all a part of the family of God. And it's so easy to ruin that if we're not careful and create generations of hate when we ought to be creating generations of love. So, guys, anything you want to add on to that?
I love y'all.
We love you too. Well, it has been great to get back on here with you. And next week we should be on more of a regular schedule to be able to be back probably at our own place and do things as normal. But, we're very, very thankful. Last week we had a great opportunity to teach Romans 1 through 8. And this week, Corey has a great opportunity to preach and teach on marriage and really help the brethren there. So there's a lot of great ministry opportunities that we're a part of. Tyler's been extremely busy with the work there at North MacArthur, blessing all those college kids and young married couples and all the studies that he has. So, I'm thankful to be back in the saddle again. And next week we'll be back to more of a normal situation. But we are glad to be back with you. We thank you for joining us today. As we do every week, we hope that you'll like, share, subscribe, follow our podcast along with our other podcasts on the Excel Pod Network. Don't forget about Thinking Kingdom and Scripture Spotlight, which is approaching 100 episodes, which is pretty awesome. So if you haven't caught that each morning, you want to do that. And if you're interested in Hebrews, and you want to see the Old Testament usage of Hebrews, man, make sure and check out what Thinking Kingdom's doing. I know Corey's on there the other day, Dan Owen. There's a lot of great people who have been on there. So check that stuff out. Tune in with us every Thursday at noon. And so until next time, we pray that the Lord will continue to bless you in your daily walk with Him and that you will stay untied. I know you don't have a little Jesus, Corey, but we'll picture it in our minds.
I got a lot of Jesus this week.
All right, folks. We love you. We'll see you next week.